all been waiting for.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are recorded. I am back after a brief interruption in the Threads of Time podcast schedule because of one and only the champion, Wolf, decided to no-show on me twice. So F him. We've moved on. He is no longer welcome on the Threads of Time podcast as long as he is holding that belt. After he gets rid of that belt, he can come grovel his way back into Threads of Time Wonderland. But until then, fear not, because we're coming to you with a guest 10 times the man that Dark Wolf is. His name is Moden Welder. Moden, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Z. How you doing?
Great. Thank you for being on the Threads of Time podcast.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. It's been one of my goals of, my recent life, I would say.
Yeah,
so I'm glad to be here.
Let's just say life in general. It's one of everybody's goals, I think.
It should be if it isn't.
So, by having you on, that now means that Threads of Time, the worldwide podcast, has now reached 3 continents with its guests.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Right, yeah, it is pretty cool. So
I'm really impressed.
I'm a little ashamed that I don't have any African friends, but I'm still looking to get Soldats on the podcast. We'd get Asia. Maybe we can get Zinger, bring him back, get Australia. And then, I need an African friend and somebody dumb enough to live in Antarctica, and I'm set.
That's well, all. If I can hook you up with somebody that I meet, I'll see if I can get him into the league and get him on the podcast, or get him into the game at least, if not the league. So,
yeah, that's right. So, actually, I don't even know if Zinger counts because I think he still lives in Japan, or maybe he moved back to Australia. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a long time. Were you around when Zinger was around?
I was. He actually had one of the worst jokes I've ever seen in CSFBL history.
Wow.
And years ago, I was coming back. We were celebrating Carnival here, which is more or less the same dates as Mardi Gras. And, I had been out celebrating, and I came back because there was a live draft for the PCL, the Pacific Coast League. And Zinger was a big part of that. And at that time, his wife was pregnant. And I asked him very casually, how was the baby, or if he had had the baby yet? And he told me he had lost the baby. And, I was, feeling pretty horrible about it. And then he's like, yeah, I'm just joking. And I'm like, Jesus, man, you don't joke about that. Like, that was as bad a joke as I've ever heard. Really.
So, did he tell you that joke on the forums or on AIM?
It was on the PCL chat box, actually. I don't know if you'd ever ventured over to that, but
I heard about the
PCL drafts happen live, and Ravens Jeff actually is a guy I went to college with, although we didn't really get to know one another until CSFBL, believe it or not. So, in that part we would have these live drafts, and so it was in the chat box, and I was pretty shocked with the humor, and then, believe it or not, I actually passed out during that draft. That was pretty embarrassing. So,
holy crap!
I remember the joke, and I passed right out.
Okay, hang on. So you gave me like 5 things to talk about because I want to talk about Ravens Jeff and going to college with him, but not knowing him. I want to talk about the PCL chat box. I want to talk about Zinger's terrible joke, but now. You've already trumped all of those by finishing it with you passed out. You passed out during the draft?
I did. It was kind of embarrassing. I had I had hustled back. I was at my house by myself. My wife was traveling for the weekend, and I had to work a couple days during that weekend. So the one day that I didn't, I went with some friends. And here in Ecuador, they celebrate Carnival by actually just throwing water at people and, just having these water fights. And so, while doing that, we were drinking pretty heavily. And my friend drove me back because I actually remembered, holy smokes, I have this draft. And it was one of those things that happened with drunken urgency. And I got back to my house got up to the computer. was getting all ready to draft. And, you know, I think I got my first pick in, even my first two or three. I had one draft, I think, where I had about five first-round picks, and I think I took five shortstops during that particular draft. They were all pretty good. But, yeah, it was during that draft that Zinger had this horrible joke. And, you know, soon after the last shortstop was taken in the first round, I managed to find my head on the keyboard. So
you passed out drunk, not because of a medical condition.
No. It was definitely because of, you know, far too many libations and, you know, being happy to be on my own and doing a, you know, CSFBL draft of all things when my family was not around.
How much time had passed after you passed out to when you woke up? Where in the draft order did it? How many picks did you miss?
Oh, I missed like the second and third round, basically. It was... You know, not a tremendous deal, but and people kind of come and go in that. But you know, that's actually what happened in that particular draft. So I hadn't really thought of that until this. I don't know that I actually talked about that. So
we're breaking news on the First Time Podcast.
Post that on the board. Always try to break news. Got to break the news.
Oh my God! Okay, so
yeah, that was probably about 7 years ago. I think my first daughter had recently been born, so.
Okay, so yeah. Now you gave me so much stuff to talk about, but before I talk about Ravens Jeff, PCL chat, or the Zinger joke, let me back you up to Carnival for a second. Well, two parts of Carnival. First one, I want to know a little bit more about Carnival because I think everybody else, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just the only dumbass, but I always thought it just happened in Rio de Janeiro. I didn't know it happened other places. So maybe you could explain that a little bit more. And then I want you to explain the thinking to leave one of the greatest parties ever to go home to draft.
Sounds pretty bad in hindsight, right? Yeah. But I'll start with the second question first, just because, you know, at the time, I guess, I was pretty excited about having five draft picks for all the, and I mean, I had seen the draft list and everything, and it had all these shortstops, and it really all worked out. So I was really intent on making sure I got all those picks, and you know, it was okay at the end. I mean, it was really towards the end of the party, so you know,
yeah, if you have five first rounders, okay. You got to get those picks in.
There was a lot of investment that went into those picks. So, you know, I had to do what I had to do, but yeah, Carnival is, it's really all the, it's tied to Lent and, you know, so it is actually celebrated in a bunch of places. I think in Venice, if I'm not mistaken, there's a pretty significant Carnival celebration. You know, certainly here in Ecuador they do. And like I said, here in Ecuador, it's not nearly as, big of a pageant as Brazil is, and people are generally more clothed. But he, you know, they celebrate just by throwing water at one another. It's kind of a pain in the ass because sometimes it coincides with dates like Valentine's Day and things like that. And so people will also throw water at unsuspecting people. And so a few years ago, I think it was like the first Valentine's Day, I was meeting up with my wife and we were going out to dinner and I was in a suit. And some asshole dumped a bucket of water on me from a balcony. So I was pretty infuriated, as one can imagine. But you know, we all kind of laughed it off at the end of the day. So, but yeah, that's how it's celebrated here. And there are different celebrations everywhere. But I mean, it is essentially the equivalent of Mardi Gras. And you know, so that's the story for that.
I should have figured that it was tied into Catholicism somehow, because Catholics love to drink and act like assholes. But
there is a fair amount of that.
So does it happen right before Lent?
Mm-hmm.
Then
yeah,
you give up everything.
What, 3 or 4 days leading up to Lent, and then everything's given up. So
yeah, so you just let loose, and then you give something up for Lent.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so okay, so you get home, you're on the thing, and so you're just kind of small talking in between your picks in the first round. That's when you say, "Hey Zinger, how's the baby?" And then he says, I actually lost the baby. So everybody in chat can see this.
Oh, yeah. This was very public. And I don't remember if anybody in TCL or, you know, or anybody who would be listening was in that chat at the time. But
how long after he said that did he fess up that it was a joke?
Well, maybe a minute later. I'm not sure. I mean, to tell you the truth, it's very possible that he could recognize that I was, under the influence of grapes there. And so he might have been just messing with me. But still, it was a pretty, pretty bad joke.
Yeah.
Especially before the baby's born. So I was certainly well enough to say, hey, man, that's like a really bad joke. So, and I think it was a hit. So
that's a great story. Through it about a year.
Yeah, Zinger, I don't know what's happened to him, but after that joke, I really, really wasn't missing him,
Jesus. Zinger was one of those guys that somehow, like, everybody thought was a pretty good guy, but he always found himself into trouble, like the big blow up with Scrub and some of those things. Like, when you hear the backstory to it, I don't know if Zinger was always completely innocent.
He had a prickish edge to him, I think. He was a pretty competitive guy, and I guess he was coaching and all that. He was really into his basketball coaching, and as I recall, I really haven't thought about him that much, other than that. Really, that joke is about all I remember about Zinger anymore. But
there's some there's a good TCL history thing of him and Mets GM getting into a fight. There's a good thread somewhere in there called "Pizza in Your Face" that kind of refers to it, and I think it actually refers to a thread before that. But if you get a chance, you should read it. It's a quintessential Zinger. Time. So, anyways, this PCL chat, I remember, I've had a lot of people talk to me about the history of the Pacific Coast League, because it seemed like it was kind of a league before its time. Were you in it from the beginning?
I was, yeah. I had been one of the original owners there, and, in fact, I think I was one of the original commissioners, if I'm not mistaken. It was me and Ravens Jeff and Coach Fulgen. Bo Fulgen was the third. And so I think the three of us more or less kept things going. But truth be told, really, Jeff did all the work. And, he ended up building a ton of useful tools for CSFBL that are probably still pretty usable today. I mean, he's definitely still around. He's definitely keeping that league going. Although really, it's on its last legs. I think there are a bunch of unowned teams, and I've kept a team in there just because I've kept it there. Just like in the Hall of Fame League, which I still have. I think I'm the last original owner from that league as well. I've kept my team there, but I really just haven't done anything with it for, I don't know, a bunch of years now.
So the Pacific Coast League, I feel like there was a story behind the name Pacific Coast League. Was one of the original owners a player in it or something?
I don't think so, but I think Bo Fulgen was from Oregon or something, and so there was a lot of interest in the PCL, I guess, specifically from him, and I think... historically, it's always been a league with a lot of offense in real life. And so, I guess that was sort of the interest. And so everybody took a team, and all the parks were made as close as possible to the real team's dimensions and things like that. So,
yeah,
it was pretty fun. It was pretty competitive, and a lot of good owners have been in and out of that league over the years.
Yeah, I know the Pacific Coast League in real life had a lot of Major League Baseball players come out of it, too. I think just because... Well, I don't know why. I'd like to say that it's because people like to play out there, but I don't think it really, like the Iowa Cubs are in that league, and so that doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't realize the Iowa Cubs were in there, but you know, for me, it's pretty interesting right now since I'm a Mets fan, because Noah Syndergaard, the big prospect for the Mets, has been just getting, you know, seemingly lit up. You know, he's a horrible ERA and everything out that way. But that's just how the league goes. It's so offense friendly that people are, you know, pitchers' stats are pretty bad out there. Nobody can take them very seriously.
You follow minor league baseball for your team?
A little bit. I mean, I follow the news for the Mets. I mean, there's not been much positive to follow with the Mets. So, you know, I guess always looking towards the future has made me keep an eye on who the prospects are. And this Syndergaard guy is one of the guys they got for R.A. Dickey a couple years ago. And he's turned out to be a pretty big prospect. So,
you know, are you going to Vegas with us?
I would love to. I'm not entirely sure that it's going to work out yet. I've got a bunch of things going on that I'm working on, you know, trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to actually be physically living, I guess. So, you know, right now I'm pretty, you know, happy here in Ecuador, but I am looking at some opportunities to live up in the States too. So just depends on timing.
Yeah. So you keep talking, God, everything you say, it touches on something that, something new that I want to talk about. So I'm trying to keep myself straight here, but before we get too far, I want to throw this out at you if it helps, because
sure.
On the days that we're going to be, let me make sure I'm right here. Yeah, I'm right. On the days that we're going to be in Las Vegas, Syndergaard plays for Las Vegas, and they're going to be playing at home at 7:05 Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. So I bet he's catching one of those nights.
It could be. It could be. My arm is being twisted even more.
Yep.
No, I'd really love to go. I've met a bunch of you guys already, but I would love to kind of see the whole group together in person. And,
oh, it's so fun. It's going to be so much fun.
It sounds that way. So the stories of the, you know, the in-person Wolf games and everything have always really amused me quite a bit. So I'm really looking forward to that. Hope it works out.
Yeah, you're going to have to make it. It'd be a lot of fun. So let me go back to the two guys I wanted to talk about in PCL before we move on. Bo Fulgen. Is that how you say it?
I think so. I've met his dad before. I've never met Bo, but I met his dad actually, which is kind of a funny thing. He's a big guy into Latin American studies evidently. And so I was at a conference in Portland and Bo's like, you have to meet my dad. And I ended up meeting up with him, and he's a real pleasant guy, but you know, real hippie guy, real into, you know, his Latin American studies. I think he's an anthropologist, and it was pretty cool, but I never did get to meet Bo himself in person.
So the reason I wanted to mention him is because Bo Fulgen always had that picture of himself where he looks like such an asshole. You know, with that, you know, the stocking cap down, and he had the facial hair, and he kind of is looking off to the side. Everybody knows what picture I'm talking about, because he had his avatar for years. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, absolutely.
And so I always wondered if he was such a hood rat gangster in real life, or if that was just kind of a thing, just his photo.
Yeah, I never got to know. I suspect it's not. It seems like probably it's one of those pictures that definitely tells the wrong story entirely. But yeah, it definitely gave me a different impression from what I grew to understand about Bo.
Yeah. Well, I'm totally Facebook stalking him right now just so I can see other photos of him. And he looks relatively normal. He still does not smile in any of his pictures, so he doesn't seem like a happy guy. But at least he is not, you know, rolling them bones or whatever gangsters do. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think he's had some health issues lately. So I hope he's okay. Really.
Probably from getting shot. That's what happens out on the streets. Old Fulgin. Get your shit together, man. I love you. I don't love you. I don't even know you. Anyways. So, and then Ravens Jeff. Now I want to hear this story about how you went to college with this guy, but you didn't know him. Where did you go to college?
University of Richmond. So you're the head of your company.
That's right.
And I are both fighters. And yep. Jeff as well went to Richmond. I can't remember if he saw my name or I saw his name. Probably he saw my name, since my username is not very difficult to figure out.
It was
and,
for me.
But yeah, he reached out and just asked if I went to Richmond. And, we got to talking quite a bit. And I met up with him a couple times. He lives in Maryland, not too far from D.C., and so I'd be on my way out to see one of the universities that we work with, and on the way back I'd usually stop and grab a beer to something with him. And really good guy, and really, like I said, he's done a lot for CSFDL over the years. Just a lot of the tools, like a lot of the guys do. I'm always really impressed at how many people develop things for third party things for the game to work, and pretty cool.
But the thing about Ravens Jeff is he was developing these tools back in like 2004.
Oh yeah, definitely. He was
way ahead of his time. Because he made that draft order generator. Wasn't he the one that actually did streaks and feats that he turned over to Piggy? Or am I thinking of that wrong? I don't know. But
I think you might have that wrong. I'm not sure, but it might have been.
But he did the draft order editor before, 10 years before Jar made his, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think Jeff definitely was a very early adopter of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So he recognized your name. So he must have known you from school, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of mutual friends, and it was just weird. I mean, Richmond's not that big of a school. We definitely graduated the same year, class of probably 700 students, but we just had different circles of friends that occasionally intersected, I guess, but we never had actually hung out before.
Are you guys Eskimo brothers?
I don't even know what you mean by that.
Oh, you don't? Oh, it's, you're an Eskimo brother with somebody if you and the other guy have slept with the same girl. Then you become Eskimo brothers, and you can create a whole network of Eskimo brothers.
That'd be quite a network, man. That's something else. But yeah, I don't know. I can't say that with any degree of certainty.
Well, yeah.
Can't say we've done the research on that yet.
Well, in Vegas, I plan to become Eskimo brothers with pretty much everybody there. That's not married. I'm not trying to ruin any relationships.
I think that's a hell of an idea.
Yeah, thank you.
I support that.
Thanks. So you said he figured out your name pretty easily, but that was one thing I was going to mention to you is not everybody else did. Let me tell you how broken my tiny little heart was when I found out that you aren't a welder of any kind. I thought that you were a modern welder when I first saw your name. I was like, okay, well, he's not one of the old welders. He's a new welder. But you're not.
Yeah, man.
You're Mark Odenwelder.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I wouldn't even know what to do. I'd probably burn my leg off with, a soldering iron. So it's better to keep that away from me.
So when everybody pretty much calls you Moden, is that weird for you?
It's funny. I mean, it's just grown on me over the years. It doesn't really, bother me in one way or another. But it is funny that that's really become how I've been known to everybody.
Yeah. But not everybody calls you Moden Welder. Most people call you Moden Wolf.
This is very true. That's a name that will not go away.
In the Wolf Game podcast, you claimed that you were not a wolf very often, that you just have a bad rap. But I looked back on it, and there was 6 out of 8 wolf games where you were a wolf. The odds of that...
Yeah, it was a rough stretch.
Yeah, I mean, the odds of that happening, I don't even think humans are able to calculate. I don't know that to be true, but I don't think they have a calculation to figure that out yet. But it's not probable.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it certainly stands to reason that there have been some people who have made some direct appointments of roles over the years, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that happened once or twice along the way.
You're blaming the mods.
I am blaming the mods.
Wow.
Absolutely.
This is big.
It's all the mods' fault.
Yeah. Now, in this last wolf game, you know, I was pretty sure that Hank was a wolf at the end, and you weren't. But Jelly and some other people voted for you. And I think the reason was because of that stigma that you have as being a wolf. Is that what you think it was?
I definitely think there was some wolf game bias coming through there. It came through loud and clear. Everybody just assumed I was a wolf, but I was not. I was all village right from the very start, as I admitted to, you know, what was somewhat controversial, I suppose. But, yeah, it was... Definitely something I couldn't even defend. I wasn't even around to say, hey, guys, come on, it's Hank. But, you know, whatever. So this last game, it was good just because we really just needed information and real information. And, you know, me dying was certainly not the worst thing that could have happened for the village.
Right, sure. So when you give me your thoughts on this last game, you know, that... it obviously had a lot of posts, third most in league history, which is saying a lot. You know, Joke said it was imbalanced. A lot of people said it was balanced. It was just, you know, how the decisions affected the outcome. What was your take on it? I don't know how imbalanced it could be when it lasted, you know, 7.5 days, but...
That's a good point. I mean, I really thought at the beginning, given that I thought the mechanism for people to come back, for villagers to return, I really thought there would be more wolves. So
yeah.
I really was working under the assumption that there would be 5 or maybe 6 six wolves out there. But, you know, that was not the case, as we found out. But working under that assumption, you know, I also was continuing to wait for some sort of mechanism to happen in which we were suddenly handed a big curveball, and that really never happened either. You know, aside from just general gameplay, I mean, Bill was quite a curveball throughout the game. He really played well, and you know, I was very fooled by him, as I've been before. You know, I think maybe we were wolves together in that giant game, you know, where we had 23 players, the game that Afro ran.
Yeah,
and I really had forgotten that he's really good at that game. So,
yeah, Bill's really good. You know, I think the curveball wasn't what happened. It was what didn't happen. And I don't think Clone expected it either, is that it took until day 6 before any of the ghosts died. You know, no one got brought back. No wolves died that were tied to somebody. No villagers were lynched that were or eaten that were tied to somebody until Goot on day 6. I think the game would have been a little bit different if more people fell off earlier. But everybody played the game through almost the entire thing except for Cubs.
For sure. I mean, when you disappeared sort of on Saturday just because you had disappeared, I thought you had died and we just didn't know about it. And so I was asking about that, but I was really surprised by how that all worked out too. I don't know if, you know, I guess it was just random numbers or whatever Clone had in mind to pick people out. But yeah, that shocked me. I mean, like you're saying, what wasn't happening was what was making me more confused as the game went on. I kept waiting for something else to happen that didn't.
Yeah, I caught a brief relapse of vagism that weekend, but I'm over it. I just needed a little bit of, I need a little fix, and now I'm good. So,
all right.
I feel like
stay focused, man.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I did it with a girl that could only be here for 2.5 days and can't come back for 3 months. That's the smartest way to do it, because you know, we all have our weaknesses, and if I would have gotten involved with somebody here in Austin, I would have been in trouble forever. So I know a lot of people were, like Trimpic said, the hero is dead. No, I am still fighting the good fight against all the oppressive and awful things that vagism can... You know, speaking of vagism, there's a story, I need to share it with the league, about this 109-year-old woman in France, and they asked her, what is the key to your longevity? And her comment was, stay away from men. And I was like, yep. This woman's perfect, a perfect description of what can happen if men and women agree on this and stop their dickism and their vagism, or penism, I don't know, I have to come up with a name for that, and separate from each other once and for all.
Yeah, you know, I saw that article too, and it made me laugh. I thought that was very apropos for you know, what we've been discussing in the league for some time now. So
yeah,
I enjoyed that article.
Oh, I heard a door open. Is somebody in your office?
No, that was me stomping on my floor, I think. I think I just shifted here. Oh. It's got old wooden floors, and so I really can't do anything discreetly in here.
Yeah, so what the listenership does not know is right before the podcast, Moden got up to go get a drink of soda, or go get a soda, and while he was walking, I swear to you, it sounded like King Kong had come into his office. Like, his floor is made out of, like, acoustic reverberation tiles that will make blood come from your ears. So I don't know how you work in an office that is that loud. That would drive me crazy.
You know, if I'm making the noise, I don't care. So
you're like
other people,
bull in a china shop in that place.
That's how I am everywhere I am, Jason. I just can't avoid that particular kind of mentality, I suppose.
So feel free to say as much or as little as you want about this, but I think some people are probably interested in what are you doing in Ecuador? And so maybe give a brief overview of what are you doing? What's your job?
Sure. Well, I direct a nonprofit down here, and we're an educational nonprofit. I actually arrived here for the first time about 17, almost 18 years ago now. I came down here to study abroad, and when I got to graduation time, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I returned and I taught English here. My institution basically has three major things, and one of the things that we do is we run study abroad programs. We also have the biggest English school in the city I live in Cuenca. So, you know, it's a good-sized English school. And then we also have an elementary school and high school. And so I'm the overseer, I suppose. I'm the executive director of this whole institution. And, you know, really, I ended up here because I had studied abroad here many, many years ago. And I returned in 2005 because I was sort of disinterested in what I was doing at the time. I was living in Washington, D.C., working for Booz Allen Hamilton of Edward Snowden fame. And,
nice.
You know, I really wasn't very very thrilled with the job I was doing. I mean, I liked the people that I worked with and everything, but the job was not nearly stimulating at all. And I had the opportunity to come back here. And so I came back in 2005, actually just about when I started playing CSFBL. And you know, I had plans to come for 2 years or so and then go back and live in the States and work at a university or something. But I ended up meeting my wife and having children, and here I am. So, you know, I've been here for quite some time now, and it's been interesting. Ecuador's had a lot of changes since I first arrived, you know, generally for the better. But, you know, it's really been interesting to live in a developing country, I guess.
So, so you met, your wife is from Ecuador?
She is, yeah. She's an artist. She lives in Cuenca here, or she's from Cuenca originally. You know, I met her here, and she was directing our art school. We had a community art school as well that used to be part of our foundation. And now we don't have that, but, you know, she teaches art and, you know, is a mom, basically, in her free time, you know, for whatever that means. So,
you, you named your TCL team after the town you live in, Cuenca.
I did. Yeah. And I used one of my favorite Spanish words, which is escobazo, which means a blow with a broom. So,
like hit somebody, you know, with a broom?
Exactly. Give you a good whack with a broom. So,
wow. They're badass down there in Ecuador.
It's really, you know, it's very tough. Very tough. I have been on the receiving end of one of those.
Of an escobazo?
That's right, man.
From your wife?
Right. A friend of my family. Yeah, I made a smart remark and, I got whacked with a broom, somewhat friendly, but, you know, there was a little bit of an edge to it.
So it's not just a euphemism. That's a real thing. Like, people get hit with brooms.
Occasionally. I mean, I suppose if there was a frying pan or something else that I could have been whacked with, you know, it might have been that. But, no, literally that time I got hit with a broom, and when you know, I realized that there's a suffix in Spanish, A-Z-O, which means a blow with, a hit with. And so you can add A-Z-O to any noun, and so it's, you're getting hit with that thing.
Like during Carnival, then it's a aguazo?
Yeah, it could be like an aguazo, yeah.
Aguazo.
Exactly, yep.
We're tying it all together. So
you got it.
So between, you talk about getting hit with a broom, you talk about... you talk about Carnival. You talk about all these things. What are some of the best things about living in South America and Ecuador specifically compared to the United States?
You know, I mean, one of the things that I really like about here, and I talk to a lot of people, interestingly, Cuenca, you know, joke, you might want to know this. It's the best place in the world to retire to.
Nice.
But yeah.
Why?
It's the last 5 years, people have chosen this place to be the best place in the world to retire to because medical care is pretty inexpensive. You can live pretty well. You know, food is, restaurants are quite inexpensive. To go out to a good restaurant here, it'll cost you, you know, $10 instead of $40 per person. And, you know, so that's one of the things. So people who are retiring, they can count on good health care. They can count on living pretty inexpensively. People who are trying to live on Social Security can actually stretch their dollar, I guess, quite a bit here. So, you know, that's one of the things. And then the weather here, I've been telling you about this thunderstorm that we had today. It's pretty uncommon, but the weather here, it's almost always springtime. I mean, it's pretty much between 55 and 75 degrees every day of the year. You know,
really?
It's really beautiful weather. Yeah, I live up in the mountains. Cuenca's up at about 8,400 feet. And, you know, the weather is just really always pleasant. It's like an eternal spring. So I'd say that's really where people are pretty happy to be here.
You know, that's what the weather's like right now in Austin, and it is pretty much through a couple months of winter, and it is so perfect here right now. I never want it to change. And so Cuenca, is that right? Mm-hmm. Is like that year round.
Pretty much, yeah. It's, you know, you get down on the coast and it gets really hot here. You know, it's what people assume when you live on the equator. But up in the mountains, it's really pleasant. And so, you know, all the flowers, you know, most of the roses in the world come from Ecuador, from Colombia. And, you know, they grow year round and people can, they ship them all over the world. You know, the rose industry is one of the biggest industries here, for example. But yeah, really the weather's just spectacular.
I didn't know that. How what's the population of the city you're in?
About 600,000 people.
Oh, it's good size.
Yeah, it's growing pretty well right now. Some have projected that it'll be 1 million people by 2020, and I sure hope not. But we'll have to see how things progress.
And so a lot of Americans are moving down there to retire?
Yeah, there are about 6,000 or 7,000 Americans who live here in Cuenca. And, you know, they're interesting. I mean, there are some really cool people who have moved here. There are others who amazingly basically sold everything and moved here without ever having visited before and not speaking Spanish. And yeah, there are some people like them who end up being pretty miserable at the end of the day because they just didn't do their due diligence. You know, I wouldn't move next door without looking at where I was moving, let alone to another continent with another language that I don't speak. But, you know, it's been a wide variety of people. I've gotten to meet some really cool artists and musicians and, you know, different business people. A good friend of mine here is actually, he's a young retiree. He was a bank president in Texas. And, you know, he's here now. And so it's nice to have them here. But, you know, I mean, it's a very diverse group and a lot of people are coming here for tourism. An interesting piece of trivia is that I think Ecuador is now the first country to have invested in a Super Bowl ad. So you may actually see an ad on Sunday night, you know, a 30-second spot, which I guess they spent nearly $4 million on. And the people are sort of shocked about this. As they get to figure out what the Super Bowl is. So, you know, I've been pretty amused by this. I don't know that other countries have done this. Something I was reading today said that nobody else has done this before to promote tourism.
I don't remember it.
Me neither. Wow, so I'll just assume it's true.
We'll be watching for the Ecuador commercial during the Super Bowl. That's pretty slick. So let me ask you this. When you talk about people moving down there, I've heard the term like expatriate. What do you, what does that actually mean?
I guess it's somebody who's moved from another country to live in another place. So, I mean, I suppose that I would meet that definition, although I've never particularly liked the term. I don't know that I want to be known as an expatriate. I mean, I kind of feel like I live wherever I live. It doesn't matter if I'm here in, you know, New Jersey or Washington or you know, Europe or whatever. But it's
for some reason I thought that you had to give up citizenship, but it does. I'm looking it up now. I guess it's just somebody that lives outside their native country and that's it. So you can still have dual citizenship and be an expatriate.
Yep. Yeah. And in fact, I actually just did get Ecuadorian citizenship as well. So I've got dual citizenship now.
Just in time to move back.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You were just saying on the boards that you're really excited that you got your citizenship to go to Cuba. And now we can all go to Cuba.
just missed. Don't happen in time. But hey, what are you going to do? So
you plan on visiting Cuba?
I'd like to. I've always been very interested in it. You know, I've heard it's a neat place to go. Like you were mentioning on the boards, it is like Havana's like a city trapped in time, and so that's always been interesting to me. And I that's probably going to disappear very quickly, I would imagine. You know, as people can have U.S. dollars and people can buy new cars and that sort of thing. So. You know, I'd kind of like to see it while it's still in its older state for better or for worse. I mean, I'd just like to observe it.
Yeah, I'd like to make that trip too. I think it's a interesting country and kind of a country that's grown up at utilizing everything around them because their imports are so limited that they have to be the ultimate recyclers. You know, I was watching the documentary about Cuba, and they were showing, like, to keep these cars on the road and keep them in pristine shape, that they're reusing like tin roofs and stuff like that for the body of the car.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things I found living here in Ecuador is that people are very, very good at recycling things and very good at keeping things working. And, you know, if your TV breaks, you're not going to throw it out. You're going to actually get it fixed. And prices are pretty reasonable for that. Like my car down here, when we've had to get it fixed, we got our motor pretty well tuned up. You know, we had to get it taken out and fixed and that sort of thing. And it's in great shape. You know, the people fixed it and the cost for, you know, removing the motor from the car was something like $500. So,
right.
You know, I mean, just even getting somebody to tell you the price for that will cost you $500. So, you know, people are just much more, they're of the idea of recycling and, you know, keeping things going, and there's no reason to throw something away that still can work.
So enough about all the good stuff about South America. Now let's flip it around and talk about the worst stuff about South America. And sure, I get it. The people are nice. You met your wife there. Sure, the weather's perfect. Okay, great. They recycle. All that's great. You know what doesn't happen on a daily basis in the United States? You don't get fucking kidnapped.
All right. Yeah.
So now this is one of the best stories I've ever heard in my life. Would you mind retelling the time when you got actually kidnapped in a taxi cab? Held
sure,
hostage.
Yeah, this was now 2 years ago. Coming up on February 14th, I was on my way to the U.S. for a conference. And I had flown up to Quito and was about to fly on to Miami the following morning. And so I got up to Quito, and because it was Valentine's Day, the hotel where I was staying, their taxis were just all busy and everything. So, you know, like I said before, one of my main businesses here is running study abroad programs. And part of our orientation for people is, you know, don't get into cabs and, you know, always take trusted cabs and all that. But, you know, at this point I'd been here 9 years. And so, you know, got in probably about 9 o'clock and decided I was just going to go grab a quick bite to eat before coming back and going to bed. And so, you know, I went to find a cab and there was no taxi there. So I went out to the street and I hailed a cab. And, you know, one went by, two went by, finally a third cab stopped for me. And I got into the cab and, you know, I said, I want to go to this area, you know, take me there. And so the taxi driver started to take me there. And there was a lot of traffic out because, you know, it was Valentine's Day and a lot of people were out. And so we started to take a slightly different route than I would have taken. The guy's like, yeah, there's a lot of traffic, is there? I'm like, yeah, there is. And, you know, all of a sudden this car backed out in front of us. And he's like, well, I guess I have to stop for the car, right? And, you know, it was a very strange comment that he made. And, you know, but I was like, yeah, I guess you do. I mean, you know, what do you say to somebody who says that? And, you know, as I was responding to that, all of a sudden the doors unlocked and three guys jumped into the car and, you know, they were all yelling very loudly and they all started kind of, you know, beating on me a little bit, you know, both with fists and I guess open hands. And, you know, they were just making a lot of noise and, you know, I quickly realized what was going on because I had heard of this happening before. And, you know, in Quito, it really had not happened often to my knowledge. In Guayaquil, that's the biggest city, it had been much more prominent there. And so, you know, I, before I even knew what I was doing, I was kind of hitting back at these guys and, you know, I was responding before I was, you know, thinking. And, you know, all of a sudden this guy had a knife pulled out on me. And, you know, that's when I started to calm down a little bit. But, you know, at that point they had taken out tear gas and they held it out about, I don't know, 2 inches from my eyes. And they started spraying it into both of my eyes. I just got really loaded up with tear gas. And the guy with the knife ended up being the guy that I got a good punch on because, you know, he actually pressed it a little bit harder. And so I did get a little bit cut on my face and on my neck. And they were like, you know, calm down. You know, we just want to rob you. We don't want to hurt you. And, you know, at this point I was calm. I wasn't really afraid, but I was definitely in a smart ass mood too. And so I was like, well, you know, that's really great of you. You know, you just want to rob me. You don't want to hurt me. So that's really nice of you. Thank you. And I went out, I didn't have my wallet with me. I didn't have my passport with me. I just had $50 and I had a leather coat on. And so they ended up taking that. But, you know, they had really been looking for my cell phone, which I had also left at the hotel, and they were looking for my ATM cards and my credit cards so we could go hit all the bank machines and make withdrawals. They probably would have tried to keep me until 12 o'clock passed so we could do it again. But since I didn't have any of that, you know, they realized that they couldn't get much out of me, and we kind of just started talking at the end. They were just like, wow, you speak Spanish really well. And I was like, well, you know, that's just great. You can't assume that everybody doesn't speak Spanish. And finally, they left me about 15 minutes later. They left me behind the National Soccer Stadium in Quito. And it was pretty rough because the guy, the cut on my face wasn't really a big cut, but it was a bloody cut. And my face was just, you know, I looked like, you know, I was like Mick Foley there. You know, at the end, I was just bleeding all over the place from my face. And, you know, so the guard in the area that sort of near where they left me really didn't want to help me at first. But, you know, they called the police and police came and they took me to the hospital to get a tetanus shot and all that. And it worked out just fine. I mean, I was happy that it happened to me and not to, you know, one of my students. Just because I could have, you know, I kind of could figure out what to do. But, you know, it was a fairly harrowing experience, I guess. But it was strange. I mean, I really didn't feel scared, which, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm a nervous person when I'm walking around. But, you know, with these people, I just didn't feel that scared. So I guess it was, you know, it was a bizarre incident.
And the adrenaline, I mean, that's just a crazy story. Really uncomfortable, I'm sure, for some of the people listening, because they kind of, if they're like me, they put themselves in that scenario. And what a crazy situation. You didn't think at some point that, or initially, that they might kill you?
It really never occurred to me. I mean, I definitely, once I started to think and not react and hit people and everything, I mean, you know, some of those options were starting to come into my mind. But, you know, so that in that regard, too, talking to these people was another point in my favor that I could communicate with them. And, you know, I once I became calm, I did remain calm. And they became calm as well. And, you know, once they got everything from me, it was just like, okay, well, we're going to drop you off here. I mean, truth be told, they left me with $5 in my pocket so I could get a cab back to my hotel.
Did they really? Wow.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, and that's kind of common in that situation. So, I mean, I was pretty clear that they didn't want to hurt me. I mean, I did really believe that. You know, they would have picked the wrong guy if they wanted to get a whole lot of money. you know, and really, I let my guard down, and you know, I've lived here for 9 years with nothing, literally nothing, ever having happened to me, and you know, it was pretty clear that it would never happen, and then suddenly it did, and so I mean, I was prepared in that I didn't have the stuff that would have been of interest to them. You know, I'd always kept that kind of thing in mind. But yeah, it was definitely a pretty lousy situation, and ever since then I've been, you know, taking only cabs that I know. You know, here in Cuenca where I live, it's not as big of a concern. It's a very small city in many ways, but you know, it was a pretty harrowing experience, like I said. So
it seems like you were pretty lucky in that you didn't have your bank cards or your cell phone or the rest of your money. But why didn't you have that? I don't think I've ever left anywhere without having all of those things.
Yeah, I just left them in the hotel because I was figuring, you know what, if I go out, it is at night, and you know, in certain spots there are pickpockets and things like that. And because I was traveling the following morning, I just didn't want anything to happen. And so really my plan, and this is something that I tell when I'm orienting students, is that, you know, only bring what you need. And I really only needed a little bit of cash to go get dinner. I probably even had more cash than I needed, really. So, you know, that was just planning on only having what I really needed for that particular time out.
So that wasn't an abnormal thing for you to leave that stuff back at the hotel. It wasn't like you somehow psychically knew that something bad might happen.
No. I you know, that was part of my general planning. So, I mean, I followed through kind of on most of what my plan is. But it was, you know, I didn't really do the entire plan perfectly. So,
yeah, that's just a crazy, crazy story. So, well, I'm glad you're all right.
Me too. You know, calling my wife to say what had happened. I called to, you know, find out our insurance number, just because I had to go to the hospital, and, you know, kind of telling her about that was very fun, because until she could actually see me, I knew she was going to be worrying and everything. And, you know, it took about 24 hours, maybe really 2 days for the pepper spray to get out of my eyes too. That was the most unpleasant part of the whole thing, just because it was there. And I mean, my eyes were really sensitive to light for a while.
Yeah. Cause they sprayed it right in your eyes. And then you got cut on the face too. You must've looked terrible when you walked up to that guard.
Yeah. I was, definitely not looking like somebody you would want to hang out with.
Yeah. So the crazy thing, how I first heard this story is during the now infamous meetup between you, myself, and PR, where a couple interesting things happened.
Details keep coming about that.
Yeah, but including PR jumping on my car and me driving around with him drunk, which probably wasn't the greatest decision ever, while he's hanging off my hood like a Duke boy. earlier in the night, we're, it's me, you, PR, and then PR's drug mule. We're all hanging out at the Coliseum bar, and PR and I are going back and forth telling stories and telling interesting things, or at least what we think is interesting. And then you're just quietly listening, and then just drop that story on us after we babbled on about stupid stuff for an hour, and we felt like the biggest morons in the world. Like, you were just, it's like we were playing dominoes and you had one domino in your hand, and then after we got done playing for an hour, you just slapped that fucker on the ground, broke the table. It's a domino, bitches. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that was a funny night, really. You know, I'm in general, I'm somebody who listens and listens and listens, but you know, it was pretty funny. The two of you had quite a reaction to that.
Because we live in our little United States bubble where things like that don't happen generally. So to hear it happen to you was eye opening.
Yeah, you know, on the other hand, I feel as safe as possible here, too. I mean, you know, without getting into details and everything, but, you know, a lot of people come to my institution for information about how to go to study in the U.S. And unfortunately, you know, parents come in with their children, you know, college-age children, and they're like, you know, are my kids going to get shot if they go to college in the U.S.? And
oh, really?
So, I mean, you know, it's an amazing
of the U.S.?
A lot of people have that impression for sure. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, you know, we explain, sure, you know, I don't think anything will happen, but of course, you know, nobody ever expects things to happen. And, you know, there's a lot of craziness that's going on in a lot of places right now. And, you know, so the perspective of things is really important. I mean, that's one of the things I really value about living abroad. And, you know, looking at the U.S. from afar sometimes, you know, I really do feel like I have different, I've changed a lot. I figured out recently that I've lived more than half of my adult life here in Ecuador.
Wow.
Outside of the U.S. Like, since I graduated college, more than half of my time I've lived abroad. And so, you know, there are a lot of things, you know, I think I keep up to date with a lot of things, but all of a sudden I just have no idea what people are talking about sometimes. And it's a really bizarre thing for me because, like I said, I mean, I work with college students and I'm pretty up to date on a lot of stuff. I mean, I read the news a lot. I you know, pay attention to things, and yet there's still just these holes, I guess, as far as my knowledge goes sometimes that surprise me.
Well, you don't keep up with your Kim Kardashian and Lindsay Lohan news like we do.
Not nearly as much, although, you know, I saw that Lindsay Lohan has Chikungunya or whatever that disease
is. Oh, does she?
She does. I just saw that recently, and I was pretty intrigued because that's happening right here in Ecuador. So I wondered if she had been to Ecuador recently.
Couple things about that. Like, first, there's this big story in the United States right now where these British researchers are planning on releasing millions of mosquitoes in the Florida Keys. And these mosquitoes are genetically modified they're all males, to mate with the female, and then the offspring die. And the reason they're doing it is because of global warming. Some of the tropical diseases that are carried by mosquitoes are starting to get to the United States, namely that one and dengue fever, which, as you know, there's no cure for. And so they're trying to kill off the mosquito populations to avoid those diseases. So hearing Lindsay Lohan get it is interesting, because she also last year did ayahuasca, and I'd like to point out that she hasn't been in trouble since.
There you go.
That disease. So I wonder if she actually got it during one of her shamanic trips down to Peru.
That's interesting. I don't know, but you know, that would be pretty interesting if that all happened. It's pretty cool. Sorry, I was just going to say, like, we have this woman who's from New York, who's one of the preeminent dengue researchers in the world, who, you know, we do some work with here at my institution. And it's pretty cool because she, you know, brings her students here to get them to learn Spanish before they go down and do research on dengue. And, you know, for me, it's really cool to you know, I mean, be talking about this. It's growing up in New Jersey and going to school in Virginia, I certainly never thought that dengue would have any real effect on anything, and yet it's such a big deal. And I'm pretty excited that we're, you know, indirectly contributing to hopefully getting rid of some of these things.
Yeah, dengue fever is one of the scariest things I've ever seen. I saw somebody that was afflicted with it, and they call it bone break fever, because I mean, it literally debilitates you to the point where your muscles and your bones start to contort, and your wrist goes backwards like you're one of the bad guys in the movie The Grudge. You know, your elbows are breaking backwards, and I mean, it's just horrific.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the thing that I've been told is that it even hurts to move your eyes. So, you know, thinking about how many eye motions we have in a second, you know, that's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, God, that's crazy. So, but anyways, back to the you talking about the kidnapping story. That was actually the first time we met, but the second time we were supposed to meet. I don't remember what happened, but about a year before that, you and I, you were in Madison or somewhere near, and we didn't hook up, but I don't remember why. Do you?
I think, as I recall, my meeting schedule was a little bit on the, it wasn't very clear, and so I think I got in touch with you fairly late. I think it was 8 or 8:30. And as I recall, you were very particular about how your special lady friend wouldn't let you out at that point. So,
that is not true.
That's how I remember it.
That she said I couldn't come out and play?
I think you were pretty tired, too. But that
sounds more likely, because what you're talking about is you're saying that I had the like the dengue fever of vagism. Except the bone that broke was my penis. And she had it in her hand. Maybe. I don't remember that specifically, but vagism is a hell of a disease, so it could have happened.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but it was something to the effect of, you know, it was a little bit too late, and you know, I think you probably had a pretty busy day, and I had as well. So, you know, I think we had just folded our hands and decided to do it another time.
And then we did do it another time. Actually, we did it two other times, because right before I moved to Austin, you made the trip while I was working at the Hilton. And actually, that was a pretty late night, too, because I don't think you got in that night until like 8:30, and we went out for dinner.
Yeah, it was a long day, but I really appreciated your generosity very much. It was great to visit with you and everything. It was cool to see you also in your place of work. I know, yeah. You know, I mean, you have always been very clear about how much pride you take in your job, you know, and it's pretty clear that that's continued in your new job. But, you know, really, it was cool to see how you were working. It was impressive to me. So, you know, good job, man.
How I function in my natural environment.
Yes, it was like being on a safari.
Yeah, well, yeah, I do take a lot of pride in it. Yeah, but it was fun. We went out to that deluxe burger place. So that was great food. I do miss that restaurant. That was my favorite Madison restaurant.
Really nice. That was good.
Yeah,
good
taste. So one thing that I want to bring up before I forget, because I want to talk about the game, the CSFBL a little bit more, but before I forget, I got to bring up Clash of Clans. Because night we actually played Clash of Clans at Deluxe, or at least I did. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I think I got an attack in as well. So.
Yeah. But we both retired.
Time suck. Yeah, big time suck. It's a real wallet drain. You know, it's amazing, and there's no real end, and that's the part for me that was getting so frustrating. And I mean, there are a lot of games like that that just really don't have a real goal. And you know, as time was going on, I just disappeared, as you probably noticed. But you know, I really just stopped logging in, because it was amazing. There was no goal, and I was having a tough time dealing with that. So, you know, it just had to. It had its place in my life, and now it doesn't. So, you know, it's there's no more of that for me.
But. You hit the nail on the head that there's no end, and that's And it's frustrating because they have such a good model of those little rewards that you're always striving for. And then, like, I came to the realization that there is no end. And what really did it for me, and I am going to make a horrific admission on the Threads of Time podcast right now. What did it for me is I have this little counter on my phone counting all the days I've been sober, and which is like 570 days now. But it also has a counter on how much money you saved by not drinking alcohol. And it was up to like $9,000 or something. So I was like, well, since I quit drinking, though, I've been playing these stupid games, you know, Clash of Clans. I played this game for a while called Crime City. Same basic thing. I wonder how much I've spent on those games. So I went into my bank, usbank.com. My username is Jay Havy. My password, oh, never mind. I go in and I sort it all by what I've spent on Apple, iTunes.
Yeah, the iTunes store.
Yeah, iTunes store. Now, granted, this number includes music that I bought, but audiobooks. It includes some other stuff, but the majority of it came from Clash of Clans. I am going to get so much shit when I say this out loud. Since I quit drinking, so 570 days, at the iTunes store, I spent $11,700.
Wow. Yeah, I can believe that. You know, I can't say I've gotten that high, but it's definitely been a lot more than I really need to spend.
Yeah. That, so. And I got,
yeah, and there's just no way to get it back. That's the hard part too. Right. It's not like it's investment in anything. It truly is like just lighting dollar bills on fire.
It really is. And the problem I had in that game is I was running two different guys that I was spending money on, and then those two guys were supplying the entire clan with troops. So like it was just like this perpetual like. Money suck, and then yeah, it was just time wasted. So I don't know.
Yeah, you've done well, man, to get out of there, and me too. So
addictive, you know, personalities, like Jar said in the Wolf game, he said Zubaz doesn't like hitting singles; he only goes for home runs, and, which is basically my personality. It's all or none. So when I get into Clash of Clans, it was all I had to have everything.
Yeah, and getting to the top there, it's, you know, you just can't, I don't know how these people do it, where they can do it without spending, you know.
You can't.
Like thousands and thousands of dollars.
You
I just
gotta
can't,
spend money.
I can't fathom it. So, you know, same for me. It's just, you know, definitely I'm glad there's no more Clash of Clans in my life.
Agreed. So, but there is still CSFBL in our lives. And the other thing that we talked about that night, because you were going through it at the time, was you were just, I think it was the first season that you were going to miss 57 games. And so you had kind of a run there where you had some weak seasons. Where are you at mindset-wise with the game right now, specifically with TCL?
Well, with TCL, it's funny because honestly, you know, certainly I've not made all perfect decisions in any way, but I have been analyzing my play since I joined TCL. And, you know, I took over a team that was in pretty good shape with Trickett, and he had been the previous owner, and there were a lot of really good pieces in there. But it was interesting because a couple of factors that were in play were that I had no scouting from when I started, and I was playing in a cavernous stadium, which has never been my personal stadium of choice. And so it was really interesting for me to suddenly have this team that I just didn't really know how they were other than through analyzing their actual production stats as opposed to their ratings. And also, you know, like I said, playing in this stadium that I just really never played in before. So I kind of had to figure out, okay, well, how do you play in this? as we went along, and I made a bunch of trades, and you know, I think I dealt with you. I think my very first trade was with Hawkeye, actually, which was a big surprise. I think nobody saw that one coming. But with all that, I made some trades, and ultimately, it was a team that had never been to the World Series or had never won the World Series, and I was pretty happy to have accomplished that when it happened. But you know, the years of no scouting and even, you know, little investment, you know, definitely had some players going into rapid decline. And, you know, certainly I got to the point where I was, you know, prepared to deal with that. But, you know, I did try to deal some guys over the years. I've complained about this a little bit. You know, it's mostly just complaining for complaining's sake, but you know, it drove me nuts that I couldn't deal, you know, my center fielder with, you know, 80 range, 85 discipline, 85 power, and nobody wanted him. And I was just like, you know, how can I not get a first round pick for this guy? And, you know, I still have the guy to this day. You know, he's now 36, he was 29 at the time. And, you know, I couldn't get some of the pieces that I would have liked to have gotten. And since that point, there are a couple guys that I've drafted too, who I think were, you know, decent picks, but they've just been horribly slow developers. I mean, I've got all my money in development and drills and everything. I mean, I've got stuff, you know, but, you know, they just haven't been developing. So, I mean, even with this last flip, I just looked at my low minors and I'm like, damn it, I'm going to have another year where I don't have these guys ready to call up. Like they're still, you know, they've still got 25 points to go in a major category. And so they're really not that good. And I'd rather keep them down to get the extra boost for whatever that's worth than call them up to, you know, lose that. And so when they're already slow developers, I need to get every point that I can get. So that part's been frustrating for me because, you know, at one time, however briefly it was, I was briefly the class of dead ball. And now I'm, you know, certainly enjoying my time in the gutter there. But, you know, I'm still convinced that our division is very underrated.
Oh, it certainly is. It's the most competitive division, not only in TCL, but in CSFBL historically.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you had a chance to be in the famous Berkshire division of CBF.
Yeah.
That's also a very competitive division, but I'd say it's second to dead ball.
I agree. And the numbers clearly back us up. No division in CSFBL has had as much parity as that division. Jelly, look it up. Do the numbers.
That's right.
Now, I think Punch people would be surprised when they heard the stat that of the last three owners to win a World Series in TCL, you're one of them.
That's right, man.
So only been Dark Wolf, Ken, and you.
That's right. We really, as far as I'm concerned, and with all due respect to you, Jason, but I think we are the three premier owners of the whole league. So
I wouldn't disagree.
You know, we've got titles to prove it. So
numbers don't lie, Jelly. Look it up.
Look it up.
Look it up, punk. Oh yeah, and somehow we got to fit in a Boise reference because he doesn't listen to the podcast unless we talk about him. He's a super narcissist. He admitted it through text message. So say something about Boise. It doesn't even have to be good.
You know, I mean, here's what's funny about Boise. He's a South Jersey guy. And so actually, when I listened to his podcast, I was amused. I'm a North Jersey guy, and you know, so it was just, it really cracked me up. I was like, you know, I've got to meet this guy, but. You know, he's a Philly fan, for Christ's sakes. Like, there's nothing worse than that.
There is nothing worse than a Philly fan. That is so true. You got a lot of Sun Prairie Cardinal retreads on your team. You do. You got Clarence Herrick, Anthony McNamara, Gerald O'Keefe, Thomas Vang. All those guys used to play for me.
And that was not during your premiere time.
No. I actually liked Thomas Vang. I thought he was going to turn into something not special maybe, but pretty good. But he had a bad year last year.
Yeah, he really wasn't very good. And that's the other thing.
He has a lot of DI too. But
yeah, I've been hoping old Vang would do some more walking than he's done. Yeah, you know, I mean, one thing that I did do finally last season, I actually remembered to do it, is that I did change my park to my comfort zone, but it was pretty amazing how dramatically that affected a couple of the guys that I did have, like Sherman Truitt, who was, you know, he had a pretty monster year two seasons ago, I think, like almost 1,000, I guess he ended up around 900 OPS, but, you know, He definitely suffered from the smaller park, so you know, I guess I'm seeing some of the effects of those changes too. But that's definitely my comfort zone, and I'm waiting to get the pieces. You know, I'll put a plug out for my. I'm dealing. I've got things to deal. I've got picks. I've got players. You know, not good players, but I've got players. So
well, you got your ace. I mean, this Mark Chu guy. He looks every bit a top tier ace.
He's good. You know, and I even wanted to try to deal him. And I think, our friend from, across the pond there, Daniel Patton was the only one who even tried to make an offer for Chu. And I think he offered me 2 32-year-old mediocre players and a 25-year-old okay guy. And, you know, I think a hearty handshake for Chu. And I was like, you know, I'm not giving you Chu for that. So, you know, it's gotten to a point. I do agree with our good friend Jelly that making deals in this league is a challenge. You know, everybody does try to one up one another, and you know, I'm very excited. I'm looking at the live trade thread as we speak, and I wonder how few deals will actually go down with all this action.
I feel like, well, I don't know. We're still making quite a bit of deals. I don't know. I think I am pretty easy to trade with. There's some people that are easy to trade with that get deals done. I shouldn't even say it out loud because he won't let me forget it, but I think Dark Wolf is really easy to trade with. Him and I get a lot of deals done with each other. You and I have gotten deals done, and actually Daniel Patton and I have gotten quite a few deals done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I don't know that I've gotten a deal done with Daniel Patton, but Dark Wolf I've dealt with many times. I got, you know, Crawford, the super stud second baseman. I got him from Dark Wolf a couple seasons ago. He was really the crown piece for winning the World Series. And, you know, like you said, I've dealt with you. I've dealt with Joke. I've dealt with Hawkeye, very first deal. I've dealt with Piggy. I think that was one of the first big international deals. I don't know if Piggy and Soldats have ever gotten a deal done.
Ooh, yeah, that might have been the first non-American deal.
Yeah, it was quite a deal. You know, I try to be a trailblazer, and so you know, that's what I do. International relations.
And you still got Kevin Moreno on your team in his 22nd season.
Oh God!
He survived the flip.
It was pretty amazing that he survived, because he is not in great shape. But I've been just hoping that I could get him those last 6 wins. I'd like to get him to 500, but you know.
Wow! Yeah, he's 6 wins away, but he went 9-20 last year.
Yeah, and that 20 loss season is not a crowning achievement, I guess, on his career, but. You know, he's struggling. He's throwing 6.3 strikeouts per 9, and he's walking guys like crazy and giving up hits. But, you know, until I get something better, I'm going to try to muscle him straight through to those 500 wins, because he's a pitcher who deserves a good round number.
Yes, he deserves his 500th win. So maybe if he gets 500 wins, he'll get into the Hall of Fame.
It's a very good chance, and chances are good that he will go in with an Escobasso on his hat if he does go into the Hall of Fame. So,
as far as I'm concerned, he's already got one.
Me too. You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, because see, now I'm getting myself all confused. Is Northfield Nightmares was Jarre's team, right? So who was Gibraltar Rock Apes? Patton take his team from? Rent?
Yeah, I think he was a Rent. He took Rent.
Yeah, that was Rent's team. So Moreno spent most of his years with Rent. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, so he can't go in with a Gibraltar Rock Ape. He wasn't even on that team.
No, he sure wasn't. Yeah. You know? Look at both of those teams, though. Northfield Nightmares, Gibraltar Rock Apes, Valoris Patriots, Cuenca Escobasos. None of those teams were even here 5 seasons ago. Not even the Patriots, you know? I mean, remember, controversial name change.
Yeah.
Manitoba is the biggest scofflaw in the whole league.
For a guy that lives by rule and order, Joke likes to play by his own rules a lot.
He does. He makes up his own rules, and he follows them, though. He does follow his own rules to a T.
So remind me again, I think you told me once, but your franchise name is the CC Restaurant Tours. Where did that come from?
Well, I used to live in Crystal City in Arlington, Virginia, and the Crystal City Restaurant is actually an infamous restaurant in Arlington, Virginia. It's a local pseudo strip club.
Yes,
that serves a great steak. And
it does.
So I lived half a block from that place, and so at the time I joined CSFBL right as I was leaving, and so that was the horrible motivation for that name, but it's stuck.
So I'm trying to look it up here. Crystal City, and it was in Arlington, Virginia. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what do you mean it was a pseudo strip club? What does that mean?
It was just know.
More it, like a Hooters?
And all that stuff. No, I mean, definitely not full, the people didn't undress very much. They kept pasties on and all that. So
pasties. So they really were strippers, though.
Oh, they were.
Yes, I'm looking at it now. They are definitely strippers. There's poles and everything, but it's a sit down restaurant with tablecloths.
Restaurant with tablecloths, steaks, things like that. And so
this is the weirdest restaurant I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty weird. Oh, Camel Ticklers just logged in.
Camel Ticklers? Do you think this is one of the girls that works at the Crystal City?
I wonder. That would be very ironic. Oh, Camel Ticklers is just under Boise. Huh, look at that.
Just under Boise, just like every Saturday. God. So, well, I don't think you ever told me that story. I would have remembered that. So you were a card-carrying frequent member of the Crystal City?
I wouldn't say frequent, but every once in a while I played indoor soccer, and on Sundays we would have our games, and often that would be like the only restaurant that would be open after like a 10 o'clock game or something. And so we would go on Sunday nights and eat food there.
Okay, so everybody listening, I want you to go to crystalcityrestaurant.com, and I want you to look at their logo, because their logo, I think, is supposed to be like a turkey wearing high heels, but if you look at it from the front view, it actually, I think, is a woman's pelvis with legs. I mean, a woman's pelvis has legs, but it's just not proportioned. Just go to Crystal City Restaurant and look at this logo. And look at the pictures, because Moden's in like 3 of them.
No, I am not. Yeah,
he's passed out at a PCL draft in the corner in one. he's getting taken hostage and getting kidnapped by the jukebox in the next one. go to this website. This is my new favorite restaurant.
Yeah, next time you go to DC, you definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, they're running a special right now. If you buy $100 in gift cards, they give you $120. That's a good deal.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
But they give you the gift cards all in $1 gift cards. I'm not sure why. It's really weird. $121 gift cards. What am I going to do with those? Slide them through somebody's butt?
You need a wheelbarrow, man.
Oh, my God. All right. So, believe it or not, we have hit the 1 hour and 30 minute mark of the podcast.
We have.
Time flies. So,
it's gone very quickly.
You're closing up shop soon. You're at work right now, so I want to get you home. But first, I want to give you the opportunity to say anything you want, get anything off your chest, just irrationally blast somebody or tell them that you love them, anything you want to do.
Oh, man. No. You know, I think when we had the Wolf Game podcast the other day, or a couple weeks ago now, you would ask me what role that I like best, and having been Vanillager this last game, it was miserable for me. That's
that sucks,
Vanillager,
right?
Really horrible, and that's definitely not my forte. The skills that a good Vanillager can bring to the game are not nearly what my own strengths happen to be, and so it was miserable for me. Really, you know, I think that's something. I have a better answer for you now regarding that. So. You know, definitely, I'm definitely happier being a wolf. I'm definitely happier having some sort of skill or something that I can use, you know. But I hate having the role of Vanillager. And Rent, my friend, Vanillager is a role. I will stick to my guns in that regard. But, you know, it's miserable for me.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, there's one person whose name I won't mention this podcast. And, you know, I'll let you all figure out who that might be. And, you know, other than that, I think it's good to be here. I mean, I've really had a pleasure meeting so many people from CSFPL over the years. You know, I can't remember if I'm actually the only person who's met Jar in person.
I didn't know you met Jar.
Oh, yeah. We tried to go to a St. Louis Cardinals game together, and then a tornado hit touchdown very close to St. Louis, and so they canceled the game, and we went on our merry way after about hanging out in the stadium for a half hour together.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it was great to meet Jar. You know, I've met, you know, Jelly and Pimp a couple times, and... Barroom Hero is a guy that I met quite a few times many years ago. You know, a lot of people over the years I've caught up with, and it's you know, always been a pleasure to do so. So I really would like to get to this meetup in Las Vegas. Like I said, timing might not work out this time, but it would definitely be very cool to be able to do so.
Yeah, and you should be thanked for that. You've always taken the opportunities that your job affords you when you're traveling to try and meet up with people. And I want to personally thank you for that. I've enjoyed our time talking, and I think you're a pretty compelling guy. And I really hope that you can find a way. I know you're sounding a little pessimistic right now, but if you can find a way to get to Vegas, even if it's not for the whole thing, just for a day or something. I think this is going to be kind of a legendary meetup and one we're going to be talking about for years. And you would be a wonderful addition to it. So make every effort you can to make it. It's going to be awesome.
Great. Yeah, no, I definitely will. And I definitely would be happy to do so.
And let me just tease it. I'm not saying this officially, but I might have a surprise for the group. Knowing me, I probably am going to have a surprise for the group, so you should be there so you can see it.
Oh, man, and by dropping the word tease, that wasn't a little breadcrumb along the way here?
Yeah, that was a big breadcrumb. And when I talk about tease, I'm not talking about Lemke's wife, but I do really hope she's there too, and if she's listening, Lemke is not the man for you that I could be. And you should divorce him, and or we should just hook up in Vegas. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to get too forward about another guy's wife. So, all right. That is the podcast for Moden. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And, I hope we can do it again sometime.
We definitely will. All right. Thank you to everyone listening except for Dark Wolf, because you're the reason there hasn't been a Threads of Time podcast for 2 weeks. Thanks to my guest, Moden. Thanks to all my sponsors. I'm sure the check's in the mail. And until next time, officially, Soul Dads, you are on the clock. Out.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.